We're checking in with you, our listeners, about your favorite cities on Travel with Rick Steves. We're at 877-333-7425. By email, it's radio@ricksteves.com. And you can post a few lines about your favorite city in the radio message board. You'll find it in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Elizabeth's on the line in Sacramento, California. Elizabeth, we're talking about favorite cities in the world.
Right.
What would you recommend?
It's hard, Rick, but I'm going to have to say Dublin.
Dublin?
Yep. The Irish people, it's such a beautiful place. It really is.
And why do you like Dublin?
Well, you know, I went there as a woman by myself. I rented a car and I drove around for a week. And I felt so safe. You know, I was having a ball in this pub one night, watching all the dancing and stuff. And I got out at about 12 midnight and I walked back to the hotel. And I never felt threatened. I never felt like, you know, anyone was going to do me harm.
You know, I understand what you're saying. And we went there with our kids once when our kids were teenagers. And I'll tell you, it was a great place for a family vacation with teenagers because the kids could be out and about in all the crazy sort of nightlife going on. And I felt it was a big city. It was a wonderful urban scene, but I felt it was very safe.
Yeah. And I just love striking up a conversation with, like, crossing the street. The Irish people are so friendly, you know, and I'd feel, like, kind of bad, like I had to end the conversation, you know, eventually.
You know, they keep messing up my itinerary. I think I've got this long list of things to do, and I end up talking the day away with just these wonderful people.
It's true. And, like, in the pub, too, I just felt like, I don't know, people strike up conversations with you, and they say, well, I'm treating you to a pint, you know, things like that.
Yeah. You know, one reason why I really like Ireland, I get the sensation that I'm understanding a foreign language.
Yeah, sure. And Scottish, sometimes I cannot understand them with the really strong, you know, accents they have.
Ugh. But the Irish, they've got this wonderful brogue and they love to talk. And it's just so charming. I mean, I can be involved in a conversation with somebody and I can remember just chatting away and the sun goes down and it gets dark and we forget to even to turn on the lights. We're sitting there in the dark talking. They just love to share and get into this wonderful art of conversation. Hey, you enjoyed Dublin. Did you get outside of Dublin and find any smaller towns that you liked in Ireland?
I did. Yeah, Rick, I did. I drove some of those roads. They're a little scary because there's like no shoulder. You know, but I did them. And sometimes I had to make the sign of the cross while I was driving. But I ended up in this little town called Yonel. Maybe, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Now, that's on the southeast coast of Ireland.
Yes, and they filmed Moby Dick back in the 1954, 53, I'm not sure.
Okay, wow.
But it was nice. I love that town.
Yeah, and why did you like it?
Well, you know, you might say, oh, Liz, you were there on a slow day. I mean, it was, you know, Sunday morning, everyone's in church. This little coffee shop was open. Of course, I was talking with everyone, having a ball, reading the different newspapers. They're so literate. There's so many newspapers. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
And they know so much about our country.
Yeah.
They know celebrities there just like we know. You know what I mean?
Sure. They know our culture pretty well. The nice thing about Ireland, of course, we have this massive culture. Ireland's got, what, 3 or 4 million people, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody who's a big shot in Dublin on their TV, you'll see him in a pub in a town like Yonel the next day. And it's just like, oh, yeah, he was just on TV in Dublin and now he's having a pint with you.
Yeah. Well, I remember I just briefly had time to watch TV, but one time I was watching something. It was like a game show. And they had a woman on there, and this nice man, oh, charisma and all that. And he goes, well, tell me, love, you mean you've never been off the island? You've never been out of Ireland? And then, you know, it was just so wonderful. And I actually felt that traveled a lot. But I thought to myself, I've been to Ireland. I'm kind of mad because I don't want to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
I just want to keep going back and exploring different cities.
And where else can you sit down and meet a charming stranger who says, now tell me, love?
No, it's true. That's how they talk to you. And then you start talking like that with them, and you feel comfortable.
After a week in Ireland, I pick up an Irish accent, and I start to take on these wonderful characters. I feel like I'm a better person after a little time in Ireland because I'm really focused in on the simple joys of just appreciating the people around you.
Right. And the beautiful Book of Kells, I remember that. I still remember the vivid blue, the vivid gold, you know.
That Book of Kells, by the way, one of the cultural treasures of Western civilization, it's in Dublin in a beautiful museum at Trinity College, isn't it?
Yes, and they said they turn the page every day.
You get to see one page every day. They turn the page, and it's just a beautiful example of the high culture in Ireland when the rest of Europe was basically rutting in the mud, you know. I mean, that was really the high point where people were literate and a little more sophisticated. Elizabeth from Sacramento, California, thanks for your call.
Oh, no problem. I'll do it again someday.
All right. Happy travels, and maybe I'll see you in Yonel sometime on a quiet
Sunday
morning.
You know you will.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye.
Bye. And Ollie's on the phone in Goldsboro, North Carolina. Ollie, thanks for your call.
Well, Rick, I got to tell you first, you're one of my favorite people in all the world.
Really?
I admire you and your family for your travels. I really do.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about your travels. What have you enjoyed in your travels?
Oh, my goodness. 13 years in Europe, and my favorite city, and I know you've been here, is Garmisch-Partenkirchen.
Now, this is on the foothills of the Alps, this little resort town in the south of Germany, in Bavaria.
South of Munich, it's about 40 miles, and it's Garmisch, and it used to be Garmisch-Partenkirchen. Now they just call it Garmisch.
That used to be a big hangout for American troops that were stationed in southern Germany.
They had a lot of AFRC, Armed Forces Recreation Center hotels. Now they only have one called the Edelweiss, and it is gorgeous. It's a half hour from Innsbruck, Austria. You're right next to the Swiss border, and you probably know the highest point in Germany is called the Zugspitze. It's 237 feet short of being 10,000 feet up.
Yeah, let's call it 10,000 feet. That's pretty exciting.
And when you're on top, you can walk over into Austria, have maybe a little meal or drink, and walk back.
I love that. That's one of my goofy treats, is to be on top of the Zugspitze, and I really feel like I'm the highest guy in Germany right now. And you can have 1 foot in Germany and 1 foot in Austria, enjoying a 360-degree view, and half of that view is the Alps, stretching before you like a symphony. It's just incredible.
Absolutely. It is gorgeous. Like I said, I spent 9 years in Germany and 4 years in the Netherlands.
In what capacity were you in Germany?
I was in the Air Force for 22 years.
So you were stationed down there in southern Germany?
Yeah, I was stationed the 9 years in Germany at Ramstein, Kaiserslautern, and then Simbach Air Base, and then Allied Forces Central Europe. I was in NATO 9 years. Believe it or not, which I love primarily in my whole tenure, was I had 138 people working for me from 7 different nations, and my God, that was probably the best assignment I had in the entire Air Force.
But that was very gratifying.
You learn the different cultures, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. But you know what? The main thing I found out in all of my life, if nothing else, regardless of like yourself, you're well-traveled, regardless of where you go, I don't care what country, what city, what. It all depends how do you present yourself. If you go with a positive attitude, a smile, try to learn a few words of language, you will be fine.
I think those are words of wisdom, Ollie. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, you will do fine.
And I bet with that attitude, you made a lot of friends in Germany over 9 years.
In fact, one particular friend, his name is Herbert Mueller. He lives in a little village called Machenbach, which is right outside of Ramstein Air Base.
Yeah.
If I called him right now, Rick, and I said, Herb, I have a problem. He'd go to Frankfurt, he gets on the first plane out, and he comes over, and I would do the same thing. If he called me right now and said, I got a problem, I'm going.
Now, isn't that a beautiful thing? Ollie from Goldsboro, yes. North Carolina, thanks for your call.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Ollie. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Deb in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, emails us, and she writes, it seems trite, but Paris continues to amaze me after many trips. Always a new neighborhood to explore, a beautiful corner previously undiscovered. We've recently enjoyed trips closer to the periphery and Parc Montsouris, visits to the Street of Music, Rue de Rome, and much more. So Deb is visiting Paris many times, and she's staying away from the center, out towards the periphery. That's the circular ring road, the ring freeway that goes around Paris so that you don't have to drive through the middle. That's one thing that any connoisseur of France learns, is Paris has got to be the capital of Europe, and you can never run out of great reasons to go back to that great city of light. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Joe's on the phone in Chicago. Joe, thanks for your call.
One of my most experiences, and I didn't even plan on going to this place, was in Marseille in France. I was in the Côte d'Azur in the south of France, doing the Nice, the Monaco, the Cannes. And then I wanted to stop somewhere before I went to Barcelona, and I thought, well, I'll stop in Marseille. But a lot of French tourists that I was meeting while I was traveling were telling me, well, don't go to Marseille because it's a very dangerous place. They were telling me it's the most dangerous city in France. And I went there, and I absolutely loved it. So I went to the Vieux-Port, and everybody was telling me to try this, the world-famous bouillabaisse. And I noticed there was all these different prices, different price range, and different restaurants claiming that they're the best and they're the original. And I know that the bouillabaisse has, you know, several specific ingredients, especially regarding the seafood and the way you eat it also with the breadcrumbs and the garlic. But tell me, in your experiences, what do you recommend for a traveler that goes to Marseille? Because there's so many different places you can get the bouillabaisse at.
Well, you know what I recommend in Marseille is simply to walk down the main boulevard, what's it called, Canebière, I think, and then get into the Arab quarters. The Arab markets in Marseille are just so fragrant and colorful. And that's a vivid memory right there. And it reminds me of the French colonial experience and the current situation that France is dealing with a big immigrant population and how to properly assimilate them into their culture and how to deal with the, you know, economic issues and so on. Just like in our country, we're dealing with immigrant labor issues. And when you go to Marseille, you're finding, you know, a town that is, you could call it the second city of France, but of course, very few tourists go there. It's a rough and tumble city. It's a Mediterranean port. And when you do go there, you find a little better dose of reality than you'll find in other towns. And it is, of course, dangerous if you are careless. But I think if you use common sense, it's a wonderful stop. And of course, you've got the Vauport, the old port, surrounded by colorful ramshackle kind of buildings and beautiful people-friendly squares. But for me, most vivid is going through that market. I feel like I'm in the north of Africa, in Morocco or something like that. And there's a sort of a special love of life that's more North African rather than European that I think combines nicely with the French passion and expertise at living well. And it sort of carbonates your experience, I'd say.
Rick, I think you're dead on point with that. I mean, I've never been to a North African town or country myself, but being in Marseille is probably the closest experience, I think, for me to going to some place like Morocco or Algeria.
Rather than going to a famous restaurant and having a bouillabaisse, that big seafood soup, I would take that money and go into the Arabic quarter of Marseille there and have a party with 10 people. You know, you could, for the same money, you could, the drinks are on you. That's quite expensive to get a bouillabaisse, and you can go into that the Arab quarter of Marseille there and really have a vivid experience without spending very much money at all.
I think that's great advice.
Hey, Joe, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much, Rick. Keep on doing the great work.
Okay, happy travels. And Sarah's on the phone in Fallbrook, California. Sarah, thanks for your call.
Oh, you're welcome. My husband was reading a financial newsletter, a reputable one that he trusts, and here's an article about an educational program for Anglos that involves Spaniards. I read the article, and he said, what do you think? I said, oh, let's do this. Well, I don't think he expected me to go online immediately and apply, but I did. What I applied to was a place called Vaughn Town. Vaughn Town is run by Richard Vaughn. He's an American. He's in Madrid. They're actually English immersion programs for Spaniards, and they're run in Spain. He's been doing this, I think, since around 2000. If you are an Anglo, meaning American, or any other nation that speaks English as the primary language, you can qualify to go to Vaughn Town. You merely sign up online, tell them about yourself, and if you are accepted, you go. And so, it is the most budget-conscious travel we've ever seen because it only costs you the price of airline tickets to Madrid. That's it. You are there for 6 days as their guests. They pay for all your accommodations, your meals, even wine. You stay at a four-star resort at one of their locations outside of Madrid. We stayed in Guerreros, which is near Barco de Avila. It was an absolutely gorgeous hotel.
So if you speak English as a native language,
yes,
there's this immersion program for Spaniards in a
correct
resort outside of Madrid called,
that's right,
Vaughn Town.
That's
and
right.
You can go there, and they use you as sort of the, you can talk to this English-speaking person, to the Spaniards, and all you got to do is be there and be social and talk to these people, and you get to stay there with food and wine and accommodations all included. They don't pay you, but you get to have, in a sense, a Spanish vacation in a resort outside of Madrid, get to know and make friends with a lot of Spaniards and help them learn English.
You got it.
Holy cow.
Isn't that easy?
Now, this is Vaughn Town, and we'll put the information about it on our website, or people could Google it, but it's V-A-U-G-H-A-N,
uh-huh.
Town. Okay.
Town. One of the things that we didn't anticipate is you expect, because you're going to be speaking your own language, that things are going to be pretty much the way you expect them to be at home. Well, it's not the case. The days were very long because the Spaniards don't eat dinner until 9 p.m. And our days would start at 9 a.m. with breakfast. And there's a siesta from 3 to 5 in the afternoon.
But now, this is a six-day program. Are you just sitting in this resort talking to these people, or do they have activities where you
side
trip out?
They have activities. Oh, no, the activities are amazing.
Huh.
By the way, they have a like amount of Spaniards as Anglos. I think there were 29 Anglos and 29 Spaniards. So the program's kind of big. There were people there from Belgium and Canada, the UK, and from Australia and New Zealand, as well as the U.S. And you know, the interesting thing to us is that during Franco's regime, no foreign language was taught in the Spanish schools. The Spaniards were not allowed to learn another language in their school systems. So as these young, and sometimes not so young, Spaniards approach the world market for business, they find that English now is the language of business, and they're not prepared.
And they're behind.
That's right. The youngest Spaniard in our group was 24,
yeah.
And the oldest one was 51.
You know, I think that's why they have a heritage of having their movies dubbed instead of subtitled.
You're probably right.
You know, because Spain, I think, is notorious for having all the movies dubbed into Spanish. Because,
well, see, I didn't know that, but you might be right.
Franco, it goes back to Franco, I believe. So, well, this is very interesting, and you must have made some friends out of this experience.
Well, we did, and the interesting thing about that part of it, which we didn't expect, is that we became so close with these people in this very short period of time, because you're really together constantly. We exchanged email addresses and such, and when we returned, we emailed a few people that we formed a special bond with. And one young man, the 24-year-old, was a recent graduate of mechanical engineering in Madrid. He emailed and he said, I'm looking for a job and I'm having a hard time. Nobody's hiring until September. I think I'll come to California to improve my English and learn to surf.
And learn to surf. Okay.
As it turned out, we hosted him, and it was an amazing experience for all of us. One of the things that the person kind of in charge of our group said to us, he said, you will learn more about Spain in these 6 days than you will ever learn any other way. And of course, we didn't get to see much of the countryside except where we were.
I would trade that away for the experience you had
in
a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The people in our group, this young mechanical engineer, there were two or three lawyers, there was a neurosurgeon, the sales manager from Mercedes-Benz. So we got this whole spectrum of cultural.
Yeah, so these are engaged professional people trying to pick up the English by this intense program. Sarah, we've got to run, but that's been a fascinating report, and thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Rick. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, happy travels.
Bye-bye.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Special thanks to our colleagues at the BBC in London. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. We've arranged many of the interviews from past editions of the show by the countries we discuss. Look for the Rick Steves Audio Europe links on the front page of our website at ricksteves.com. And join us again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.